Hi, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Go Spartanburg podcast. My name is Mike Miller, and I will be your host for what I hope will be a show that helps you learn more about Spartanburg. On this show, we'll talk about arts and culture, recreation, history, local events, food, and local organizations that are working to improve life in the Hub City. Whether you have lived here your whole life or are new to town, I hope this podcast will help you learn more about your town and all the great things we have to do around here. In this first episode, I'm speaking with Laura Ringo and Ned Barrett from Partners for Active Living. PAL is an organization which has been around for almost 20 years and is doing great work to make Spartanburg a more livable place. So thanks for joining us, and let's get to the interview. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Go Spartanburg podcast. My name is Mike Miller, and I'm here at Partners for Active Living with Laura Ringo and Ned Barrett. Laura is the executive director of Partners for Active Living, and Ned is the trails coordinator. Is that correct?
Correct.
Laura, why don't you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up here.
Sure. So I've been at PAL for coming up on 17 years, which is a really long time, and it's been a fun run. I came to PAL after working at Children's Hospital in Knoxville in the development office there doing fundraising. And so when I moved to Spartanburg, was introduced to this small nonprofit and was really intrigued by the mission and have really enjoyed my time working here.
Cool. Ned, how about you?
So I came to Spartanburg in 2002 to teach at the day school. I was a high school English and history teacher for 18 years. When I left teaching, I took a couple of years to get back into nonprofit work. I worked at Upstate Forever, where I got to know PAL and Laura and the previous person here, Jean Crow. And in 2010, when PAL and the Hub City Farmers Market received a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, I moved over to work on that grant. So I've been here 12 years and doing trails since 2014.
Yeah, and also Ned does the podcast.
I do the podcast
for PAL, and Ned is an experienced podcaster as opposed to me, who is... You might say still learning. So Ned's, they've got a podcast, and you have, what, 43 or 4 episodes 40, already?
43 episodes.
And what's the name of that, so people
can find it?
It's
called The Daily Required. The idea is that I keep it to about a half an hour. That's the average daily required amount of exercise for an adult. So the thought is that you can listen to the podcast while you're getting your 30 minutes of activity in.
Okay, and people can find that on Apple, Spotify, any of the regular platforms?
Any of your platforms. It's also, you can listen to it on the PAL website.
Okay, great. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes for this podcast. So, Laura, tell us, how long has PAL been around? How did it get started?
Sure. So, PAL was founded in 2003. I'll start with, in the late 1990s, there was a study called the Healthy Spartanburg Study, and they looked at what are the greatest health risks facing Spartanburg County, and there was a list of 5: cardiovascular disease, diabetes, something around adult dental, adult literacy, and teen pregnancy. And so out of that, there were a couple of task forces that were formed. One of those was the Cardiovascular Disease Task Force. That is very sexy if you're in the marketing world. and that was really what was the start of PAL. So we started as a Cardiovascular Disease Task Force, then became a coalition called HeartWise, and then became an official nonprofit in 2003. And the goal was really to get ahead of a lot of the chronic diseases like heart disease that are plaguing our community and our culture, and to encourage physical activity and healthy eating, and to prevent disease. Yeah, so our kind of three-pronged approach is active living, healthy eating, and health equity. I'd love to share our vision statement, if that's okay. I think it's paints a really great picture of what we'd love to see in Spartanburg.
Sure.
So in Spartanburg, healthy living comes naturally. It is fun, easy, and safe because we're connected to our community, to each other, and to the nature that surrounds us. We utilize our vast natural resources, gardens, local markets, trails, and parks routinely. We walk and bike through our neighborhoods, play outdoors, and share healthy meals. We embrace our wonderful quality of life. So that's really kind of what we dream of for Spartanburg, is that if you choose to live a healthy lifestyle, that it's really easy, and it's kind of the default mode instead of, sometimes it's a lot of work to try to find a healthy meal or to go out and be active. So we want to flip that and make it easy to do.
Okay, so 2003, so we're almost 20 years old then.
That's right. This coming year, we'll celebrate 20 years at PAL.
Excellent. What are your funding sources? Where does the money come from generally?
We've shifted that over years, which we're really proud of. Ned and I've worked really hard on that, as well as our colleagues and our board. When we started in the early days, we were very grant-driven and grant-dependent. We still write a lot of grants in our office, but that we have a much better split between grants, between corporate gifts and events, private donations, and then we have some contracts that we do for service like the trails work that Ned does. So we've got a better balance of where our revenue comes in compared to when we used to be really primarily grant driven.
Yeah, and I've written some grants for other organizations, and I know how much trouble that can be. So knowing that you're going to have some money without having to write a grant for every dollar you get is kind of nice.
Absolutely. And I would say a lot of times with grants, you have to tell the funder up front exactly what you're going to do with their dollars. And then, of course, follow through and do what you say you're going to do. But let's say, for example, when we host the Criterium, we make revenue off of that. And those dollars are not designated for a specific project. And so we're able to use them when and how we need. So if, for example, we're working on a trail project and there's some overrun or there's a new component that we're adding that maybe we didn't write into a grant, then we're able to use those undesignated dollars and put them where it's most needed. So we've really tried to focus in recent years on securing funding that gives us flexibility to use where it's most needed to fulfill our mission.
Great. And how many folks do you have on your staff here?
Yeah, so there are 10 full-time and a couple part-time. We've got some transitions right now. That number might be shifting. But yeah, we've got a good crew.
Yeah, so that takes a pretty good budget to pay 10 people.
Yeah, so we've got Ned and then Dave. So we've got two folks working on trails. We've got a couple of folks working on marketing and fundraising. We've got a group working on food, and then a team working on our school's work. So we've got a couple of different areas where we're really focusing that line up with our strategic plan.
I guess most people are more familiar with the trails. But I know you said you have some other programs related to food and wellness. So why don't you tell us a little bit about those before we get into the trails?
And I was going to say, I'll let Ned jump in and take over the trails discussion. So we have four major areas of focus that line up with our strategic plan. The first is completing and connecting the Dan, which Ned certainly is most versed in. The second is working with two school districts. Right now we're going to be working with Spartanburg District 7 and Spartanburg District 3 to really help them prioritize health and wellness. So there is a national group that's come up with like what works in schools and what doesn't around healthy eating and active living. And so we use that model and we go into schools, we help set up a wellness committee, and then that wellness committee decides what would work best in their school around health and wellness. So for example, water promotion is a really big, easy first step for schools to get in, and We don't say other things are bad. We just really push water as the primary drink of choice, promote water, everybody getting their water bottle, being able to use their water bottle at school. And so that's kind of an easy first example of health and wellness in schools.
As opposed to chocolate milk, which was chocolate always my milk. Favorite drink.
That's right.
When I was in school with a little Tetra Pak triangle shaped thing.
That's right. That's right.
You're probably not old enough to remember those, but I bet Ned is.
You know, life's about balance, but yes, generally we like to promote water. So the second is around really understanding our role in the food system. So we convene a number of partners to talk about how to strengthen the food system. And there are two projects we're working on right now. One is a produce prescription program where we're working with physicians who suggest to their patients that they cook with more fresh local produce. And so there we've got a community partner that has sells boxes of produce every other week. It's $15 for a box, $5 if you have SNAP. And then the physician will suggest to the patient, they sign up for this program, get this box. They can take cooking classes to learn how to prepare it. But it really, we hope, is a way to start to help make access to healthy fruits and vegetables easier if that's an interest of a patient to the specific practice. And then the fourth is around active spaces and getting playing a role in redoing, upgrading, energizing those. Right now we're focused on Duncan Park. We've also worked on a parks equity study to look at where parks are, where parks aren't. Are they equally distributed among different population groups in our community? And then we do a lot of events. The Criterium and the Turkey Day 8K on Thanksgiving morning are the two that we're probably best known for.
Okay, that Turkey Day 8K is something I always see people posting pictures of, even though I've never actually done it because I'm eating.
Well, come on down. It's
a fun
really
way
fun
to spend the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Very community-minded, very great spirit. Everybody's happy. Thanksgiving's a happy day, you know, so people are generally pretty excited to be together and to be running. It's a really fun day. Mike, you should come.
I haven't run 5 miles in quite some time.
Sometimes we need bicycles leading the way, so.
Yeah.
You can come help us hand out some socks.
Okay. There you go.
Okay.
Steve likes to, our friend Steve Stravolo sponsors the water station, so come hang out with Steve.
Okay, sounds like fun. So now we're going to let Ned tell us a little bit or a lot
sure.
or as much as he wants about the trails. There are how many different trails you guys sponsor?
That's a harder question. I will look more at the system, but I do want to say that I'm amazed by the work that my colleagues do. That is really seems behind the scenes. The strengthening of the food system, strengthening of the school system is amazing. The trails are the most visible, and so people generally, you know, kind of associate us with that. But we do a lot of really great stuff, like Laura has pointed out. So trails work, you know. Your list here has several trails written down: Rail Trail, Cottonwood, Duncan Park, Glendale Shoals. That, in a way, expresses the problem that we saw in the early 2010s, is that we have a number of trails that people use and love, but they're disconnected and they're separated across town. And so there was a real desire to find a way to connect those trails so that more people could have access to them, so that it would be easier for people to get to, so that not everybody had to drive to the rail trail to go for a walk. So in 2013, we decided through the county, city, and PAL, and a number of other nonprofits and folks around town, that PAL could lead this trail development, working with the city and county, who will own and operate and maintain the trails. But that PAL, with its kind of credibility and with that capacity, could lead that movement to get the trails on the ground. So about 2014, we started really looking at how we could fit together the trails that we have. We had a trail study done by consultants who came in and made recommendations, and then we got together with community members and thought, you know, where are the best, what are the best ways for us to connect these trails? And over time, we came up with our 55-mile proposed system. At the time, we had about 12 miles of existing trail. We now have about 19 miles of existing trail on our way to 55. And we did get the significant grant from the Department of Transportation, $23.8 million, to develop trails along the Fair Forest Creek and in some other areas of town associated with it. That's 14 and a half miles of trail right there. So we have about, I think we said there are about 3 miles that are currently, 6 miles that are including Country Club Road that are currently in process and either under construction or about to go under construction. And so really the momentum has been building over these years, and we're really seeing a lot of movement on it now.
Yeah, tell me about that Country Club Road project. Any idea when that's going to be ready to go?
How old are your grandchildren? Just kidding. that is a major project, 3.5 miles of road improvements and trail addition. So we have to keep that in mind too. 179 property owners, something like that. Tremendous number of property owners that have to be contacted to sign easements, to make agreements with the SCDOT. It really is a long process. And that has now, it went out to bid in May. A bid was accepted, and I think they're going to start here shortly. There's some things that have to get sort of tied up between the accepting of a bid and the actual construction. But construction should start this summer, maybe this fall. Depends on how you see the seasons.
Yeah, I know I've seen crews out there moving telephone poles and cutting down trees.
That's been underway for a while. All the utilities that have to be moved. I've looked at the plans for those. 537 pages of plans. That's quite an undertaking. So we should show these folks some grace as they move forward.
Yeah, excuse me.
Ned, what's the name of our trail system?
My goodness gracious. So that was something that we came to, Mike, that was a process. We didn't know, we were calling them all the different pieces. We realized that we needed a single name, and working again with community partners, we came up with the name, the Daniel Morgan Trail System. We call it the Dan. We think it's a very Spartanburg centered, and we think it expresses a lot of the sort of the sentiments we want to put forward here. And so the Daniel Morgan Trail System, or the Dan, or the signs you'll see around that envelop the entire system.
I know Dan himself has done a bit of hiking up and down Morgan Square over the years.
That's true.
He keeps moving from one end to the other.
Yeah. We might have to use that one. I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
So what's the most used trail? Is it the Mary Black?
Mary Black Foundation Rail Trail for sure. It is the kind of the, not the first trail, you know, there were other trails that preceded it, but it was our first rail trail conversions right in the center of town. It's very visible. And I'll say that over the time, it was, I think, first opened in 2006. Over time, it has seen increases in use to the degree that in 2020, 217,000 uses of the rail trail, which is a tremendous number, considering that in 2012, it was at about 65,000 uses. So more and more people are finding out about it. It's getting crowded. There's a demand for more trails. And that's part of what we're trying to do, is really recreate that feel of the rail trail across town and the county.
Yeah, that'd be great. I know I'm a cyclist, if not a very good one anymore. I've kind of gotten old and slow, but I've gotten to where I hardly ever ride my bike on the road just because of the cars out there. It's kind of scary sometimes. But, I used to scoot down the rail trail on the way out to, going out towards the Croft area and so forth on the bike.
Well, it's clear that people want for the same reasons you wanted it. It feels safe. It feels comfortable. People know where they're going. There are a lot of people around. So there's a lot of, it turns into encouragement. So I think that's really, that's really kind of the model that we're using to spread that feeling.
Okay, why don't you tell us about some of these other new projects you were talking about? I know there's some discussions of things going on in Duncan Park. What can you tell us about that?
Sure. So Ned and Dave, our trails team, they collect trail counts on trails. They have some infrared counters that are in some electrical boxes that sometimes people wonder what those are. But when you walk by, the infrared light will count how many times people pass it. So that gives us, helps us track trend use data on trails. And so Ned was looking at Duncan Park and the numbers on the walking and biking, the walking trails and the biking trails over there were really low. And so we started thinking about what could happen to really help improve the use of those. And as we talked about it, there was a lot of discussion around cleaning up invasives and trying to improve the trails. But we felt like that was would have such a small impact on really attracting people. And so then the conversation got a lot bigger of how do we really reshape this whole space so that it's all connected and that it's cohesive. You got a lot of great elements out there, but not necessarily cohesive. And so received a grant from the National Park Service to do a master planning process. We've put a steering committee in place. We've already had one community meeting and survey. We've got another one next week. So if people are interested in participating, they can go to palspartanburg.org. There's a flyer about the community meeting and also a link to the survey that we would love for people to take and give us their feedback. So we've still got a ways before we've got a design on that and really know what that's going to be. But one of the things that I think is most exciting for us about Duncan Park is that on one side you've got the Mary Black Foundation Rail Trail, and we're working on improving the connection there. When you go down by the dam, it eventually the spillway creates a little creek that runs into the Fair Forest Creek. And as Ned mentioned, we're going to be building trail all along the creek. And so Duncan Park will really be this connector between two major corridors of trail. And so I think it has the opportunity to be a really great gathering spot.
Yeah, I've spent a ton of time in Duncan Park in my life. I grew up on Maxwell Road, is the very steep hill that comes down from Lucerne down towards the lake. And so I grew up walking to the baseball park and back and going to baseball games over there. And used to live in Converse Heights, so I would ride my bike over to Duncan Park and do a few laps and come back. I don't live quite as close now, so I don't get over there as often. But it's a good safe place to ride a road bike, about 2.5 miles around. And
there are people out there all the time.
Yeah, and the trails are, I mean, it's a very disjointed kind of, it's not not a great destination for mountain biking necessarily. I mean, there are some places you can get little short stretches of single track, but it's not something most people would spend a lot of time doing. I know Eric over at Bike Works did spend a lot of time trying to cut some new trails in that hilly area between the lake and like the tennis courts and so forth a while back. And those are good, but I think they've kind of gotten overgrown over the years.
A couple of things that we've heard from the community that they're interested in. One is a protected trail-like feel all the way around the lake, especially for pedestrians. There's a lot of people who feel unsafe with the mix between cars. And
it's a narrow road and then curvy, and so cars come around the corner sometimes. And if we can protect that, that'd be great.
Also some interest in activating the lake with either pier fishing or non-motorized boating. Mm-hmm. Also some simple things like benches and picnic tables and some historic signage. There's amazing history over there that needs to be captured and told.
I got busted by the cops for kayaking on Duncan Park Lake one time.
I won't tell anybody.
I know, we didn't know you had a record. Love it. Getting all your dirty secrets.
We were just over there doing some roll practice, and here comes the cops. We weren't bothering anybody, but
yeah.
In my defense, the sign said no swimming, but it didn't say no kayaking.
There you go. See, so, that's fair. Okay. Yeah. Well, we hope to make that legal.
Okay, and this Fair Forest Trail you're talking about, that sounds like a big deal.
Fair Forest Creek is an amazing opportunity that we have because it crosses the city from northwest to southeast. And I'll say, you know, we have trails along the Lawson's Fork Creek. Cottonwood Trail has been there a long time, is well loved. We've expanded that with the River Birch Trail and with some trails up at Drayton. There's also trails at Glendale Shoals all along the Lawson's Fork. And so the Lawson's Fork is really kind of present in Spartanburg life. But The Fair Forest Creek is not. It's kind of hidden. And you cross the Fair Forest Creek pretty regularly around town, like on WOEZL at Dollar General is where the Fair Forest Creek crosses. On John B. White Boulevard at O'Reilly Auto Parts, the Fair Forest Creek crosses. Down on Church Street, sort of down at the bottom of the hill, right at the city limits, before you start back up the hill heading south, that's the Fair Forest Creek, and we don't know much about it. It's beautiful. It is one of the reasons why, one of the reasons that settlers came here in the first place. The story is that one of the early Europeans who got here saw the beauty of the Fair Forest Creek floodplain and area and the open space, and it was like a park and big trees, and said, oh my, what a fair forest. And so the Fair Forest Creek really is kind of a central piece of Spartanburg, and we're looking forward to opening it up. So we applied for a major federal grant two times. The first time was a different route under a different administration, had different priorities, and so we kind of addressed those priorities to try to get that grant. We did not. That was not unexpected. We applied a second year under a new administration with new priorities, redeveloped our route to pull it into what turned out to be the Fair Forest Creek. And we started talking about it. Laura mentioned the Fair Forest Creek, and I said, well, I'll go down and look at it. And I went down, and there's a sewer right away along it, and it was clear and beautiful and wide open, big trees, lots of water, lots of shoals. And so, you know, that is just ripe for having a trail. It also hits a number of different neighborhoods across the city, so that it will really tie in more areas to the trail system. This hits one of our three criteria here is equity. So one of the things that the Biden administration asked was that we address issues of equity. Where are there not trails? Where could there be trails? And where is the wealth? Where's the poverty? And how can trails address some of those issues and maybe in improve those areas? So there are eight areas of persistent poverty along there. So that those are places where, again, not been very many recreational facilities, and really being able to tie in several along the way with schools and neighborhoods and the like. So the Fair Forest Creek project just inside the city is very exciting. Add to that the Fair Forest Creek is the creek that goes down through the middle of Croft State Park. And we are looking at ways to get down to Croft State Park. There are always challenges in these kinds of situations, but there seems to be a real opportunity for us to tie the city down to Croft State Park and really, really kind of jump up those opportunities and that use of Croft, which is, I think, also kind of underused here.
Yeah, I go out to Camp Croft all the time. I take my dog out there, and don't tell the animal control people, but I just let her run all over the place because there's hardly anybody out there. I mean, You can be out there in the middle of 4,000 acres around Lake Johnson and not see a soul for hours.
It's amazing. It's one of the most beautiful places I've been, and it's not... You know, there aren't the destinations that some of the other state parks have, but it's just nonstop pretty.
On this trail you're looking at, I don't know if this has been decided yet, but would that be more of a natural surface trail, or would you be paving it?
Nope, it's paved trail. We have, again, really trying to see the value that the community sees in the rail trail, the Mary Black Foundation rail trail. Paved surfaces are accessible to more people, including those with disabilities that inhibit their mobility. It's also something we often use. Laura, and now that her children are older, we can't use them in the same way, but would Laura put her child in a trailer on her bike and ride down that trail? And those natural surfaces don't necessarily lend themselves to that, where the paved surfaces do. There's also a maintenance aspect to that. Paved surfaces are much easier to maintain than natural surfaces, and they're actually in areas of heavy use, probably more environmentally sound, depending on, I mean, it depends on their design, but generally cut erosion, limit erosion, and really keep people in a path so that the path doesn't widen. I mean, there are a lot of benefits to having a paved path. Yeah.
And I know the big news recently is the prospect of the rail trail from Landrum up the Saluda Grade all the way into North Carolina. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I'll start with the Dan and then switch to the Saluda Grade. But so there are two things I think that are worth pointing out about the urban trail system, the Dan. The first is we don't have any more abandoned rail. So the rail trail was the abandoned rail in the urban area. So Ned and our colleague Dave are going property owner by property owner asking for permission to put a trail on property. And almost everyone has been willing to engage mm-hmm. in the conversation, which has been really amazing. But that also means it's really slow because we're not getting really large chunks of property at a time, or it's rare that we do. So it's just a slow process. But one of the many challenges and learning experiences that we've had with the urban trail system is going under a Norfolk Southern trestle at the bottom of the Drayton Trails. So the Drayton Trails are on one side, and then there's a big Norfolk Southern trestle, and then we wanted to keep going downstream along the Lawson's Fork Creek. And so it took us a good 6 years to get mm-hmm. permission to get under the Norfolk Southern trestle. We had to call a lot of people with high connections to get permission. It was a long process. It cost a lot of money to build 200 feet of canopied trail. Because the specifications from the railroad were so significant. But we're really excited that project is about ready to open to the public. But in that process, Norfolk Southern found out that we were really interested in trails. And so they let us know that they were interested in selling what they call the W Line, which starts in Tuxedo, North Carolina. And initially, they were looking at stopping in Grambling. Through our negotiations back and forth, we had asked if they would extend all the way through downtown Inman to its land grant road is the end point. It's right where Inman Health and Fitness is, just past 176 or going under 176. So yes, that is, we've been in negotiations since about February with the railroad. Although we've been in discussions for about 2 years, we've really been in negotiations since February. And most recently in the state budget, we had our Spartanburg County delegation put in $5 million to help with the acquisition of the South Carolina portion of the line. And we hope to get the remainder of the acquisition funds we need in this next coming budget cycle. So it's about 16 miles in South Carolina, 15 in North Carolina.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. It's going to go through downtown Saluda, downtown Tryon, Landrum, and Inman. It's really going to be a huge boom for those towns, and it's going to be a really spectacular experience.
Yeah, that's a rather famous stretch of railroad. I don't know if you've seen it. There's a guy that had a documentary. It was on YouTube about abandoned rail lines, and that was known as the steepest bit of railroad grade. Yep. I don't know if it's in the east or in the whole country.
I think it's intercontinental. Yes. Yeah.
It should be said that does not, that steepness does not run for 31 miles.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. It's just one section.
It is the usual railroad line that is fairly calm grades, even going uphill, but it does have that one very steep section.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's relative because a railroad can't go more than about 2 or 3%.
That's right.
So,
and I think, is it 7%? I think I saw that somewhere.
No, I don't think it's that.
It gets up to 7.
Yeah, 5 to 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've ridden up Saluda Grade on 176 a million times.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a super steep climb, but it's a pretty good little climb.
Make you breathe hard.
Yeah. Coming down, for sure.
Or grip your handlebars tighter.
So. Okay. We're excited about that. That's going to be a multi-year project, though. Mm-hmm. We've got a long way to go. We still have to get through abandonment and rail banking. There's a lot of work to do.
I'm just hoping I'm still able to ride a bike by the time
this thing is ready to go. It's going to be a great project, though. We're excited about that one.
Let's look at trying to wrap up. Any other goals or future plans we should know about?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're in the midst of a strategic plan. So we've kind of outlined what the focus areas for the organization are right now. We'll revisit those in about 2 years and see where we are and what's next for the organization. But yeah, right now we have plenty of work to keep us busy over the next couple of years. But we're really excited about what, especially changing the built environment and the design of our town, how that really is going to hopefully change people's opportunities and their behavior.
And if people want to know more, tell us what your website is.
Yes, palspartanburg.org.
Great. So thank you guys for being with me today.
Absolutely. And thanks for the invitation.
All right, that's it for today, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Well, that was a fantastic conversation with Laura and Ned. Next time on Go Spartanburg, we'll have an interview with Jay Kaufman from the Spartanburg Little Theater. Jay will tell us all about the 75-year history of the SLT and the great shows they have lined up for the upcoming season. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe. And I would just love it if you would give us a review on Apple Podcasts. The music on today's show was written by Wofford professor Tom Wright and performed by the Spartanburg Jazz Ensemble, of which I just happen to be a member. So thanks very much for joining us, and we will see you next week.